What's up, Open Floor Globe? I'm Michael the Pod Pina, and I'm joined on the other line by my good friend, Sports Illustrated senior writer Chris Herring. Rohan Nadkarni is currently on an airplane, so he'll join us later this week. But Chris was so nice to switch up his schedule to accommodate everyone. What's going on, Chris? How you doing, my man?
I'm good. What's good with you, man?
Not too much. We had a meeting before we recorded this episode, and I told you that I went to my older brother's. My older brother had a wedding, like brunch sort of thing in Boston, so I drove there this weekend, and then the drive back on Sunday morning was through Hurricane Henri. Which I do not recommend driving a car through a hurricane. That's just not a smart thing to do. So I'm glad that I made it here in one piece.
I'm glad you did too. I don't even like being stationary, like in an apartment or a house or whatever during a hurricane, let alone having to drive through one. So I'm glad you're good.
Cool. So we are neck deep right now in that sweet pocket of the NBA where the offseason actually feels like the offseason. So on today's show, you and I will be taking a look at recently released MVP betting odds for the 2021-22 regular season and kind of having a conversation about what makes sense and what doesn't as it relates to how Vegas sees the candidates. And neither of us are gamblers, so this should be a very entertaining, interesting conversation, a way to frame it. But first, another quick thanks to everyone who sent in emails this week to openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. They are all so excellent. And before we get into the MVP conversation, I actually want to read something that a longtime listener, Zach, wrote in about the LeBron KD conversation that you and I, Chris, we had on last week's episode that I thought was very interesting. So I'll read that right now. Zach writes, quote, "I don't want to bury the lead here. There isn't really an argument for KD and LeBron as equals in terms of what they've done in the NBA. You could definitely make the case that KD at his very best for a game or two is around as good as LeBron at his very best, or KD has around equal or greater skill or technical proficiency. But once today's narrative gloss is worn off, we'll be left with LeBron having probably twice as many first-team All-NBA appearances, probably three more regular season MVPs, and probably twice as many Player of the Week/Month awards. The advanced numbers for regular season and playoffs are pretty clear. That said, I think the reason so many fans and media have been slow to embrace KD isn't because he won titles, quote, the wrong way, but because KD joining the Warriors kept us from getting as many unforgettable playoff moments, the type that requires will in addition to skill. There is a reason why the most excited we've ever been about KD is after an amazing performance in a second-round series loss in the Eastern Conference. The technically brilliant finals performances didn't have the same emotional resonance when the outcome was never really in doubt. It's not a knock on KD to say that the Warriors won a title and 73 games without him. It's literally what happened." And then Zach goes on to list a bunch of memorable LeBron performances in the playoffs and asks, "Now, off the top of your head, what KD playoff performances can you think of? How did they make you feel when you watched them?" So thank you to Zach for writing that email in and sort of kind of carrying off where our conversation left off with between you and I, Chris, last week, which, you know, some of it may have felt like rambling in the moment. I don't even know how to characterize that discussion. But just what are your thoughts about Zach's email generally? And do you kind of agree with what he's trying to say here?
I actually almost wholeheartedly agree with what Zach said. And this is kind of what I was getting at last week, or at least I was trying to, that I think what I said about the Nets-Bucks series where KD goes off for 49, that was the moment that people that were upset with his decision to go to Golden State were waiting for. Those sorts of performances, I think there's a reason that a lot of us really enjoy seeing Steph go off for 50, you know, and just shooting from all over and having to do it himself. Is that the most sustainable way to win championships? No. Is it possible that someone of KD or Steph's caliber could win something meaningful that way if they were mostly the only scorer on their team. It's possible because they're that good. And I think Durant in particular is that good. That's why that resonated with us that way. Is that the only time KD has done something like that? No. Unless I'm mixing it up, there was a postseason where Russell Westbrook was out, where KD had to do a lot of heavy lifting and had to do a lot of scoring on his own, had to do a lot of assisting on his own. So we have seen him do that. Were they memorable playoff moments like what we just saw? No. You know, I think it was earlier in his career. I think we expected to be able to see more stuff like that. You know, I'll go one step further for people that dislike Russell Westbrook and his playing style. They'd probably agree with this. There were many years there where KD was playing and it was essentially having to kind of rip the ball out of Russell Westbrook's hands while playing alongside him, where KD was the leading scorer in the league. I think he finished with the most points in the league one year, and Russell Westbrook still took more shots than he did, which I'm pretty sure that's the only time in NBA history that's happened where someone led the league in raw scoring, just point totals, and didn't even take the most shots on his team. So, I mean, it for KD to have big performances, it kind of takes really ridiculous wild efficiency, at least at that point in his career, because he was playing with someone that was taking just as many shots as he was, if not more. So I think that is also part of the reason that we weren't really able to see KD have those sorts of memorable moments. Let's be honest here. LeBron built up memorable moments even as part of a big three, because part of the run that he had in Miami was with Dwayne Wade injured, with Chris Bosh injured, and so LeBron kind of had to do more on his own, whereas KD was not really part of a big three that was banged up for most of the time that he was there. So that's part of it too. LeBron played the whole first part of his career with no help, in Cleveland, and so that allowed him to build up more of those moments too. So I think Zach is right that, yeah, KD and to some extent the people that he's played with, certainly in Golden State, it's hard to look at those things as memorable, because KD was playing in situations where his team was kind of expected to win. And so there's less drama generally when you consider that, when you get the outcome that you're expecting. As far as I'm concerned, the thing you can't ever take from Bron, even though he was part of a big three at this point, was 2016. They weren't supposed to win that title. The fact that they won that title over a 73-win team. Did LeBron have a super team? Maybe, but it wasn't as super as the team that he beat and took down. And the sorts of plays that he made, the sorts of numbers he put up at the end of that series are legendary. So I will give Zach credit here that I think even if a lot of the awards and a lot of, even if KD wins the same number of championships, depending on how he does that, assuming he does that with Brooklyn or anybody else, the value of those titles, a lot of people will view them as lesser than LeBron's, given how LeBron did it, even though LeBron teamed up with people too. I don't think that people would put, certainly Bosh, even though he'll be, he's a Hall of Famer, and Wade with the condition that he was in, I don't think that people will put them in this exact same stratosphere as like a Harden at this age, and, maybe even Kyrie with the rest of the way their offense looks, a historically dominant offense. Looking at them versus the rest of the Eastern Conference, if they're healthy, they should win. And I don't know. It's funny to say that in hindsight now that LeBron's team wasn't as stacked. Maybe that's just the Warriors and how great they became. And the fact that I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't think that people are going to view those two as equal, even though maybe it should be closer than what we're giving it credit for. The numbers will give Durant more of an edge in that conversation, but the circumstances were a lot different, I think.
Right. And I mean, what spawned me even asking it to you is, looking at the situation that KD is in right now and considering his age, considering just where his status is right now, which I think is the best player. This is kind of, I don't know if maybe you'll agree with me, this is the first time in his career where he's almost unanimously considered the best player alive. Like, you're not going to find too many people who dispute that, I think, for the first time ever. I don't know how many people still think LeBron is the best ever, and there was that poll that came out that LeBron responded to where he was not unanimously perceived to be the best player on the planet for the first time in ages. But this feels to me like this is the first time that KD is on that level. And just projecting forward, the fact that he has, I don't know how many more years of great basketball KD has, but just based on what we just saw out of him in the postseason and in the Olympics, it seems like a lot. And his game feels like it'll age extremely gracefully based on, I don't know, how he moves around the court, his shooting, the fact that he can get any shot he wants because of his height. He's a 7-footer with a high release, and is one of the best 3-point shooters who ever lived, and can play in any system, can do everything. He can handle it. He can pass. So and his game is not, it's just not based on the same type of explosion and strength and speed as someone like LeBron's is. So I think that KD will just age wonderfully and might have another MVP in him, might have another scoring title in him, should have more rings to come. So the framing was just kind of looking ahead 30 years from now, looking back on these two, what we'll look at, because KD could have more rings. And, you know, we discussed this in the last episode, but I just think it's a fascinating thing to look at as we move forward. So speaking of kind of regular season MVPs, do you want to get in this discussion? I think this will be
sure
really interesting. So this is basically based off a question I posed to you last night in our outline, which is, if you had $1,000 to bet on who will win this season's MVP, what would the top five choices be for you as someone trying to win the most money you possibly can? So for this exercise, we randomly used odds from an online sports book, and I don't want to, you know, no ads here, so no plugs, I'm sorry. But I thought it would be a fun way to just essentially discuss the best players in the league and where they rank, and the MVP as an award in general. So instead of, you know, looking at things more formulaically, where it'd be KD and Luka and Giannis and LeBron and a more straightforward discussion, this opens things up a little bit when you bring in odds and you talk about some other candidates with who are more of a long shot to actually win. And again, before we begin, I should say I do not gamble because I have somewhat of an addictive personality. And if I placed a bet and won, I would probably quit my job and go do that full time. So I do not gamble.
We don't need you becoming Haralabob on us, man. Exactly. We don't need that.
Yeah, no comment. No comment. Yeah, no, that's not what we need. I agree. Shout out to Haralabob. We do generally, you and I asked you before we even started recording if you gamble. You said you do not either.
Well,
and
do you want to lay that out for everybody then, like how this works? Because I honestly looked this up for the sake of the podcast, like how betting odds work and what it means, like if we're talking about a plus 4,000 on somebody, yeah, what that means.
So,
because I didn't know what that meant until 12 hours ago.
Yes, and I had to refresh my memory as well doing research for this episode. So basically, you know, for as an example, Luka Doncic is plus 400. Those are the best odds to win MVP this upcoming season on the website that we used. And plus 400 essentially means that if I were to wager $100, I would get $400 back if Luka won MVP. So 4-1 odds. If someone is plus 5,000 and I wager $100, then I get $5,000 back. So that's basically what it is. I mean, it's pretty simple, I guess. And listed here on the site we're using I have not counted how many players are listed, but there's like 30 maybe even a little bit more than that. I don't know. But we're going to go through five, and then we have some other side questions to kind of just assess the field and analyze things. So I guess, like, even before we begin, I'm just curious, Chris, like, when you kind of look at the MVP award in general outside of this gambling discussion, there's just so many different ways to judge it. What matters to you? Is it narrative? Is it analytics? Is it team success? Is it on-off numbers? Just what carries the most weight for you?
So I think it's actually, I wouldn't even say analytics as much as just personal dominance. And so for me, and I remember, if you go back to, this was shortly after I started with SI, one of the first pieces I did was actually on Jokic and how clear it was to me that he was the MVP, like as of April, that people were, you know, it was just, I think it was Embiid and LeBron got hurt the same week, or like within the same week of each other.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like, well, damn, if it was a three-way MVP race, it just became a one-way race. And people were talking about Jokic winning. If he was going to win the award, it was just going to be by default, that he wasn't actually deserving, blah, 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 blah. And it was like, no, actually, Jokic was probably my favorite at that point anyway. And there were a whole bunch of numbers to show why, which I don't think numbers by themselves are analytics. Jokic had really, really good counting statistics. Jokic had played every game. But to me, it was a lot simpler than analytics. It was just looking at Jokic's numbers historically, his own career numbers, which obviously were probably MVP pace anyway. Or not MVP pace, but Hall of Fame pace anyway, if he continued to do this for the rest of his career. But he was blowing his own numbers over the course of his career out of the water with what he was doing this past season. And not only did it give him a really good case for being the best player this past year, but it was the best version of his own self, you know, by probably a time and a half, just as far as how efficient he was, as far as how many points he was scoring. He was blowing his previous scoring numbers out of the water. He was assisting at almost a triple-double rate. He was rebounding well. His defense was nowhere near as bad as people were making it out to be. It was actually pretty decent for the most part. His shooting numbers were incredible. So to me, it was, you know, it was actually a lot of just, wow, Jokic has already been kind of a fringe MVP candidate before, and now he's blowing his own previous numbers out of the water. And oh, by the way, he's arguably having the best season of anybody else in the league. So to me, it ends up being a question of how do these numbers look within the context of the way other stars have performed in their own careers? So, you know, when people would bring up Damian Lillard last year, I was like, okay, Lillard's having a really, really good season. These are also basically the same numbers he had last year. So for me, it's kind of hard to justify if someone hasn't won the award before, or if they finished fifth in the voting last year, and then they put up the same numbers they had last year. It's a little weird to me to justify that person winning the award, particularly if their team's not in first place or there's not some other factor that is new. So in some ways, I think it is a little bit of narrative. You know, I would not say I'm a narrative voter, but part of the narrative for me is like, are you playing better than you have before? Noticeably better than you are before statistically? Do you look different? Is there something you added to your game? And if that's not there and your numbers are just kind of paling in comparison to what you've done before, maybe that's unfair to somebody like LeBron, who's won it several times before. But to me, it's kind of, you know, and some people would say, well, it's not most improved. It's not, but if it's a lot harder to improve once you're already a superstar. And so if you are improving by leaps and bounds as a superstar, that stands out to me a lot. And I tend to give a lot of weight to that. So that was a big factor in me thinking that Jokic was the MVP really early on last year. So that's probably what I weigh more heavily than most people do.
Your Jokic column, I remember when it came out, I was a little upset because it was like so definitive that it just defeated the purpose of ever writing about MVP for the rest of the season, which got me mad. I couldn't like throw out any hot takes about like Kawhi, or I did write a column about Dame, but right, but like maybe 2 weeks before your Jokic, maybe it was earlier than that, about Dame and why he should be MVP. And then like, no, that just like, it was like a tidal wave. You just crushed it. So,
but at the time though, Dame and Jokic basically had the same record. They were, I think, 4-5 or maybe 5-6 in the West. And, you know, there were a lot of people saying, that was a crazy thing to me, is a lot of people responded to my column about Jokic saying his team's not even top four in the West. And it's like, okay, they're a game out of fourth. and their schedule's a lot easier than everybody else's, you know, going forward. They had already played the hardest part of their schedule. Portland was about to go into the hardest part of their schedule. And to me, you know, the context that I think is missed, and I think this is true of a lot of smaller markets or teams that aren't really, really sexy to watch to some people, Jokic was averaging a triple-double, I think, through the first 14 games they played, or 15 games they played. And Murray had been ass in a lot of those games because he was playing hurt. Michael Porter Jr. had missed like 10 games because of the virus or COVID protocol. I don't know whether he was actually tested positive or whatever. But I mean, it was pretty clear that Jokic was carrying this team and keeping them afloat. They were under 500 through like 15 games or whatever. But had it not been for Jokic, they probably would have been like 3 and 13 or 3-12 or something. Instead, they were something like 7-8. And to me, that's, you know, that's, people are very, very kind of small-minded as far as like where you are in the standings at any given moment, particularly when the standings are so close that 2 days and the standings could be completely flipped or different. So to me, it's just kind of like, is the body of work there? Is he doing something that he hasn't done before? And is his team reasonably good enough to where you can make an argument that, you know, he's keeping them in contention for home court advantage? That's basically what it is. Like, are you anywhere near a top four seed? And if you are, I feel like that normally is grounds to have you in that conversation. And it was very weird to me that you had people arguing, no, Dame should be the MVP, but it's like, but his team's right where Jokic's team is. And you're saying that Jokic shouldn't get it because his team's not technically in fifth or fourth or third. And then obviously by the end of the season, you know, Denver did have home court advantage, even without having Murray, and even after watching Jokic go off after Murray was out, where they won, what was it, 7 in a row or something like that, right after they got Gordon and right after they lost Murray. So it was a weird argument to me, you know, not to mention the games played. I tend to care a lot about how many games someone plays too. I think availability is a big part of the award. So that was a big disagreement that I had with a lot of people about the Embiid thing, because, you know, Embiid had already missed a lot of time before he had that injury. Some of that is just to protect him and to make sure that he doesn't get hurt, because he's obviously somewhat fragile. But that's part of it, is that whether, you know, particularly if your team is on the cusp of not making the playoffs or being a fringe team, Jokic couldn't afford to sit out games. And the fact that he played every night, I felt, was extremely valuable for a team that already didn't have its second best player.
Yeah, I think for me, like, the word value is, like, I put that on a pedestal. So I don't really, it's not that I don't care about your team's record, but, like, if I were to take this player off of this team and put, like, an average player at their position in their place, just what would happen to the team is ultimately just kind of, in my head, just takes over, and that is the number one thing that I look at. And obviously there are other factors, a player's basic stats, a player's advanced stats, all of the VORPs and the box score plus, all that stuff. I add that in too when I'm calculating it, but like on-off metrics are really important to me personally, and the word value, which I think, like, we have defensive player of the year. There's no offensive player of the year. And sometimes I feel like people vote for MVP like offensive player of the year, a lot of the people who do have a vote. And sometimes I just wish we had offensive player of the year. Like, it just, I don't know. That's like a different conversation that we can maybe have
at some point
down the line.
Though.
Yeah, because like Steph Curry should just be the offensive player of the year. Maybe Jokic would have won it anyway, I don't know, last year. But like, I don't know, it kind of, it just changes the conversation and the calculus just a little bit. And okay, we're already getting off track here. But okay, so I'm going to give you the fifth, I guess, bet I would place.
So we're ranking them. Okay.
Well, yeah, whatever. We don't, I mean, if you didn't, that's fine. I did, but it's all very, I just think these are all five smart bets to make to varying degrees. The first one I'm just going to throw out there is just very, it's kind of hot takey, but it's a good way to start the conversation. So Zion Williamson is plus 4,000. Which means if you bet, it's basically 40-1 odds. Not the greatest odds for Zion. And I think that is because the Pelicans had a terrible offseason. The Pelicans did not even make the play-in last year. I don't think a lot of people are expecting the Pelicans to make the playoffs, let alone compete for home court. So this is understandably out of left field, and Zion is also, I believe, only 21. And if you just look at historically the MVP, young guys really don't ever win, players who are that young. But I just think that he is so special, and he's going to post numbers this year that just like last year's numbers, I feel they're overlooked a little bit in terms of just what this guy did. Like, he made 548 shots in the restricted area, And to compare that, which led the NBA by a humongous margin, in 2001, Shaquille O'Neal made 506 shots in the restricted area. And I know that the rules were different and, you know, the strategies were not the same and all that. Zion played 61 games last year to get those 548 shots in the restricted area. Shaq in 2001 played 74 games. So it's Zion is just he's on another level right now. And he did not have any spacers on his team last year who played a ton with him. And so to do that despite like to do that with Steven Adams on the floor with you and with Jackson Hayes on the floor with you, I just think it's people should really pay even more attention to Zion Williamson. And so if he is better than he was, I just think the numbers alone. Now, I don't know if they will translate necessarily to winning, but if they do, because the expectations are so low for his team, like if the Pelicans are firmly in the playoff race, like forget about the play-in, like they're going to get a top 8 seed, and he is averaging, you know, 33-14 and shooting 70% or whatever, and like a lot of them aren't even assisted, you got to look at it, right? So I'm throwing him out there as just like a really interesting bet because the odds are really, 40-1 plus 4,000. That would be a good, pretty good return, I think. And he's just he's a talent that we've never really seen before. So shout out to Zion. What do you think about that?
So I was going to say this before and you were saying we're already off the rails. I think that this is a good segue to it because I think that's a good pick in the one sense that, statistically, he's going to have a good enough season to where you could make an argument that he should be considered. I don't see a universe in which his team is good enough record-wise to do that. But, and this is what I was going to say that was a segue, you know, baseball had this same thing with Cy Young several years ago, where Cy Young obviously was a mix of, you know, what is your earned run average, but more or less, if you don't have a good record as a starting pitcher, you're not going to have a chance to win the award. And I can't remember exactly who it was. I haven't been really, really, really into baseball in a long time, but I think it was Felix Hernandez, who was like 12-13 or 12-14 one year, but had like the best ERA and was clearly the most dominant pitcher and just played for a bad team that couldn't score behind him. And I think he was kind of the guy that broke through that and won the award, and now that award tends to be more based on like who's the most dominant pitcher, regardless of whether or not the team wins games when you pitch. That's really that has nothing to do with you as a pitcher, how much your team scores. You know, if you're only giving up one run or no runs each time you go out there, that's all that really should matter as a pitcher, and you got to trust that the offense will, you know, will score for you. Now it's a little different with Zion in the sense that like the man ain't defending much. So it's not like he's blameless in this. He can score a lot. He could also give up a lot. But I do think there is something to be said for the fact that, you know, if they do have a surprise season and they sneak into the playoffs as a back-end playoff team and he has those sorts of counting statistics and is that dominant, which it doesn't take very much watching him to see how dominant he actually is offensively, that he probably would deserve, you know, at least some. I mean, he gets the exposure. He doesn't have quite as many national TV games this year, but it's clear I could very easily see them getting flexed into more games if they win. That he would be interesting for that conversation and not at all a bad bet at that money. So I understand where you're coming from with that. I don't think it'll happen because I think that, you know, for how ahead of the curve people talk about basketball being and the analytics and everything else, the voting does not reflect the fact that voters are ready to do that. I think Steph is actually maybe the closest example we've seen in recent memory where someone who was at the back end of a playoff conversation got as much attention as he did. And I tend to think that he was someone that benefited from LeBron and Embiid and all those other guys being out. If Jokic benefited and won for some of those reasons or partly because of some of those reasons, Steph benefited too and being more firmly in that conversation than he would have been because of the fact that other guys were hurt and, you know, and other guys that were on good teams were hurt. So, you know, I don't think Zion would end up in the conversation, but you know, he arguably should if his team makes the playoffs and he's putting up close to 35 and, you know, double-digit rebounds and is as dominant as he was last year.
Yeah, and I think real quick before we move on from Zion, like you mentioned the defense. Like, so when we factor in narrative and expectations, I think maybe expectations is the better word than narrative, which I don't really care for. But he's going to be in a different system. Stan Van Gundy is no longer the head coach. Willie Green was hired to replace him. And I don't know, like, there's the possibility, like, because that's the way they defended last year was very, I mean, you had Zion just, you know, helping so hard in the paint and sprinting out to the three-point line, like, in a way that was so detrimental and awkward to him and his body and made him think rapidly in ways that he clearly wasn't prepared for. So if they simplify maybe what they're doing a little bit, and I don't know, I could see a path where they have a league average defense and he's just okay on that end where he doesn't have to think as much. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe he's just going to be terrible. Maybe the defense is going to be terrible. Maybe the team is going to finish like with 22 wins. I don't know, but I'm throwing that out there just because I think Zion is incredible. What was your, give me one of your bets, Chris.
So I'm not going to reel mine off any. I didn't really rank order mine, but I'll give you
that's
one.
Fine.
And I'll balance out the long shot that you just threw out. I'll balance it by putting someone that is very high up in these rankings. I'll go with Embiid here, who as of right now has the second best odds, tied for the second best odds on the book that we're looking at. So if you were to bet 100 on Embiid, you'd only win 700, which still sounds like a pretty good day to me, but you'd obviously be losing that 100 if he doesn't win. So he has really good odds here. Maybe I'm not enough of a risk taker. This will be a quick aside, but I went with my girlfriend to the Spyscape Museum in New York a couple weeks ago, and they had this really great exercise where they're like, we need to figure out, you know, before we make you a spy for our agency, what level of risk do you take with the things that you do? And it was this cool game where it was like, we're going to let you pump air into this balloon, and for every pump, you get a dollar. You start in the negative, and then you work your way up. And it was like, you start $50 in the hole, and you get six balloons, and you keep pumping the balloon until it pops. So, like, how much risk, at what point do you think the balloon will pop? And okay. You know, so I would like pump $7-$8 into it and be like, okay, I'm gonna hedge my bets here and I'm just gonna stop here. And then, you know, by the time I got to the seventh or the fifth or the sixth balloon, I was like, my balloon still hasn't popped when I cash out. So like maybe I should just keep pumping it to see how big the balloon can get. And what I learned by like the sixth balloon is that they would let you pump that thing like 25 times before you would actually burst the balloon. And so it was like, if you're only cashing out after $5 or $6, you're not taking enough risk. So I think I learned by nature, I play it safe a lot of the time. Embiid would obviously be playing it safe, but because I think he's someone that hasn't won the award before, someone that is likely to be on a team that will do very well. They just finished as the one seed. We talked about them a lot last week. I think Embiid is someone that, quite frankly, I think he does care about awards like these and things like these and honors like these. He thinks pretty highly of himself, and he should because he's great. And someone that I could kind of see trying to grit through, whether it's his load management or just if he's playing through an injury, which we saw him do in the playoffs last year. If he feels like he would have won the award if not for the injuries, that he'll probably try extremely hard to play through stuff this year to win the award, if that's what stood between him and the award. So, you know, it's a team that'll be good on both ends of the floor. He always is dominant from an on-off perspective. I mean, most people cannot stop this guy. Really nobody, you know, other than maybe Marc Gasol can really stop this guy. So I see him. I could very easily see him winning the award if he plays more games. And if he knows that that's all that's really holding him back, I tend to think that he would have a good chance as someone that hasn't won the award before. So that's why I would put him there. I tend to think that they'll finish at least in the top half of the playoff race, you know, whether it's one or two or whatever. And there'll be all the mess with Simmons floating around, which will, you know, if that's something that he has to combat or fight through or whatever, you know, maybe it makes for a cute narrative or whatever. But I could very easily see him winning the award. You wouldn't win that much money off of it compared to other guys, But I also think that there's a very good chance that he wins it.
So I have Embiid thoughts, but before I get into them, you know, we do Rohan story time with Rohan usually on the show, where he says something, tells a ridiculous personal anecdote. We're going to need you on every episode from now on to just give us a detail about Spyscape, which I didn't know existed until 35
seconds
ago.
It's the Spy Museum. It's known as the Spy Museum in New York. It's really cool.
This is incredible. I live in New York. I now have to go visit it. This balloon story you just told is blowing my brain, and I'm like, I can't even like think about this MVP exercise anymore. I want to go there right now.
It's really fun. You should go.
Very interesting. So Joel Embiid, I did not have him listed here, and I honestly didn't consider him because, yes, he finished very high last year for MVP, and as you said, I think he does care about winning the award, which matters. I just don't trust his body, and if I'm going to place a bet on him, I need better odds than that, because what is stopping him from missing 20 games again this season? I don't know. And then you do throw in the wrinkle of Ben Simmons, and if Ben Simmons is traded, who is coming back into the Sixers system, and what is the adjustment period? And if it's Dame Lillard, does that, you know, do they cannibalize each other as two superstars for the vote? Because Dame would be kind of the sexy conversation starter there. So there's too many factors here that I couldn't get down with Embiid, even though he's incredible. And I said earlier in this episode that value really matters to me, and there's like literally no one who's historically been more valuable over the past 3-4 years to their team than Embiid. Like, when he plays, they're incredible. When he doesn't, they suck. So I actually pivoted a little bit and had a different player who had equal odds, who I think is just a safer bet, and that is Kevin Durant, who is also +700.
Yeah.
And this, I know people are probably screaming about how, you know, like, James Harden is on his team, and that would hurt KD's case just as a potential Dame Embiid teaming up would hurt Embiid's case. But my argument here for KD is very simple. It's historically the best player on the best team usually is a heavy favorite to win MVP. I think the Nets are going to be the best team. I think Kevin Durant is the best player on the planet. And that's basically my argument. So, like, +700 is very simple for me.
Very detailed, so, Michael.
Exactly. So, like, I could see a world where, you know, I could see a world where Harden's stats are maybe a little bit better and this and that. But I don't think that I don't think that there will be a similar cannibalizing with Durant. I think he'll get his numbers regardless because he's that efficient. And if he stays healthy, people will appreciate the defense. People will appreciate the playmaking. And the Nets could be just the runaway story of the NBA next season. I think that they're going to be totally unstoppable. And that's what we do. We reward the best player on the best team, right? So KD was one of my choices.
So I'll counter that with one that he's not a long shot, but he's not right at the top of this board. And it'll be kind of countering a little bit of what you just said, or, you know, kind of piggybacking. You're right. The best team generally, you know, that team's best player normally is firmly in that conversation. The best team last year and one of the best teams from the year before was Utah. We talk about people that don't really get their turns or haven't really been firmly in that conversation before. I think Donovan Mitchell is someone that probably –
love it.
You know, you would get a pretty decent amount of money back from that bet if he won. Now, he was injured last year, which I think you were starting to hear his name more in, like, those, you know, if I'll say, like, those Fox Sports 1 fringe conversations where Nick Wright will mention, why isn't this guy in the conversation? And again, I think you and I talked about this before, that as someone that felt like Jokic clear and, you know, far and away was the MVP last year, that it started to feel a little bit kind of gross and weird that it kind of felt like, even though there wasn't really a good argument to be made for most other people, I think Steph towards the end made it maybe a slight conversation, but aside from him and depending on how you felt about Embiid's time missed, there wasn't much of a conversation. You started to hear Chris Paul injected in that conversation. You started to hear Donovan Mitchell. And it kind of felt like people were looking for a reason not to give it to Jokic for whatever reason, or that they felt like he wasn't deserving, even though he clearly was. Mitchell's name started to kind of be inserted at the end of that process, and then he got hurt too. You know, I think my thing, I probably would not bet on Donovan Mitchell. I think that he would be a good value play. To me, his efficiency numbers are rough, generally speaking, relative to the other guys that are normally in this conversation. So to me, I don't think he'll win. I do think that he would benefit some from being, I would say, the best scorer on that team. If you call him far and away the best player, then you get into, you know, the fights between the Jazz fans that feel like Gobert is, the conversation you had before about, okay, if we've got a defensive player of the year, who deserves offensive player of the year? Even if you're just slicing it that way, again, Mitchell is not the most efficient of the guys that are in that conversation. He tends to be very, very streaky, where he can play very well for a while, but then have really, really brutal 6-for-24 games and those sorts of performances. So, like, that's where I struggle with him a little bit, where you've got other guys that kind of are more even keel that I think really level that team out a little bit, between Ingles and certainly Conley, and Gobert is as good as he is. But, I mean, Mitchell's going to score. He's going to be the best scorer on that team, and that team should be really good. We talked about it a podcast or two ago, where I'm not sure that anybody quietly had like a more like a offseason that you feel more safe about as far as the people that they added to the team, guys that clearly helped their roster. And, you know, it wasn't a roster that needed a whole lot of help anyway. Just guys that should make that team better. If they're going to be at the top of that conversation again, you could make the argument that they'll finish with the best record in the league. And if they're doing that and Donovan Mitchell is their best scorer, then, you know, he might make sense from that perspective.
So Donovan is fascinating. The one stat that I look at that kind of kills his case a little bit, which hurts me to say because I love watching him play and the numbers are terrific and he's so young and exciting. Last season when he was on the floor, the Utah Jazz, their net rating was plus 7.9, which is great. When he was off the floor, their net rating was plus 10.3. So when you get a little better because of just how good your team is and how like stacked and deep you are, if you get hurt and the team just like doesn't really miss a beat, then it's just really hard to just call you the most valuable player in the league. And he's just a victim of that. But that doesn't take away anything from his talent level and his skill and his impact, generally speaking. Wonderful player. I like that pick. That's fun.
And just for context, so if you were to make that bet and he won, he's plus 3,000 at the odds we're looking at. So you would win $3,000 for betting on him with $100. The one other thing I'll say, and then we should move on, is that, yes, they were obviously better statistically, you know, in terms of on-off. You know, the flip side of that, which I'm sure fans of Donovan's would mention, is that, you know, they played without him in game one of the playoffs. He was reportedly really angry at the fact that they wouldn't let him come back from his injury as early as he wanted to. They lost that first game against Memphis in the playoffs, and, you know, they looked like they were missing him clearly, and then he came back and then they won. And I wouldn't say steamrolled Memphis, but, you know, they obviously won the series pretty comfortably. So that's something to consider, is that, you know, I've seen instances of teams that are just really, really deep teams and good teams that can win in the regular season. And I remember watching the Bulls and Derrick Rose, and they had their whole bench mob and everything with that. And it gets really difficult to win in the playoffs without a player like Donovan Mitchell. So, you know, on-off matters, clearly. There's no question that, you know, teams can perform a little bit better. We watched the Nuggets, you know, do really well without Jamal Murray as well in the regular season. We watched them win around in the playoffs. But I think we more or less know that, you know, the buck stops somewhere at some point. Like, you're not going to just keep up that pace in the playoffs when the competition gets tougher, when a team can really key in on your best scores, when you're missing your very best score. So I do think he adds value from that perspective, even if it's not shown and on off all the time.
Yeah, he's a ridiculous playoff performer. And, you know, you talked about him missing game one and them losing and then winning, what they win, six in a row after that when he started to play again and he came back. But then he was hampered with the ankle throughout the second round series against the Clippers. And even though his numbers were really good, you know, some were better than others for sure, but like he just didn't look like himself on the floor. And he is that elevator piece for them where the system really carries them through the regular season, and Rudy Gobert is a big part of that. But in the playoffs, you do need that guy who can go get you a bucket for sure, and he is that for them. So when he was hurt, and then you combine that with the fact that Mike Conley was not 100% either, and that I think that did them in, it's fair to say, yeah, in that series against the Clippers. Okay, so this is a bet that a player that we've talked about already at length a little bit, but it's Nikola Jokic, and
I have him on my list too.
Yes, he is plus 1600, and it just kind of like, can you explain why? Like, so this guy won it last year, obviously. Jamal Murray is not going to be around, so I think the on-off numbers will be ridiculous for Jokic this season, and there's a chance that his statistics will be even better because, well, he's getting a year older, and Murray also won't be there to eat into some of, you know, the scoring numbers, et cetera. And that's just one way to look at it. You could look at it the other way, but I look at it as his numbers will be even better than they were. And if Denver is able to float around the home court advantage, you know, 4-5 range, which I think is conceivable given the talent that they have around him still, even without Jamal Murray healthy, like, why would he not be one of the favorites in the conversation? Like, why are his odds at plus 1600, which, to add some context here, the players who are above him are Luka, Joel Embiid, KD, Giannis, Steph, Dame, and LeBron. Like, those are all wonderful players, but we're talking about someone who literally just won the award last season. Like, I don't understand. Can you explain it to me?
No, I can't. I mean, I had him really high on my list too. I don't think he'll repeat. Part of it, again, is that I think, and this is the stupidest thing, I think people are bored of him. I think that's frankly why people, you know, I don't know if it's that he just lacks an energy to people as far as, you know, I think that interviews and, you know, post-game interviews and, you know, like an electricity kind of matters. And I think to a lot of people, he's like this sleepy sort of player.
He's so funny. I love him.
I really enjoy him. I really enjoy interviewing him. I love watching him. I love watching Denver. Clearly, you know, I would say early last season, I thought he was the MVP. And then midway through it and, you know, wrote the column and everything saying that he clearly was the MVP and that there was no need to keep having the conversation if he stayed healthy. So I don't vote for the award, but if I did, he would have been. I basically said, you know, he might as well have been one and then you could have skipped the second spot and then just had three and I guess maybe a 4 or 5 or something like that because he was so far ahead of everybody else in my mind. So no player that ever wins MVP is boring to me, but I feel like this was, for whatever reason, people were, I don't know if they're rubbed the wrong way. I don't know if there's something about, you know, people have questioned, like, why is it that Giannis doesn't have this huge collection of friends in the NBA or people that really seem to vibe with him like that, if it's an international thing. I have no idea what it is, but there's something about him. And not to mention that now they didn't get a Christmas game either with the MVP. You talk about the league wanting to really lean into the international market. You have an international MVP that is young, who's super talented, who might be the best big man passer of all time, who's just getting better and is going to have to do more on his own, which, like I said before, we all get excited about Steph doing that and KD doing that. Jokic is going to have a really good opportunity to do that, and he's pretty far down in these rankings as far as the betting on. So I can't explain it other than the fact that if this is people thinking that, well, people already kind of were bored or didn't want to see him win it last year, so there's going to be an extra fatigue added in this year as far as voter fatigue, that people, it was a one-time thing that only happened because other guys got hurt, so the likelihood of it happening again, he'll have to, you know, jump over 6 skyscrapers to win it this time to really clear the threshold that people are going to set for him. So that's the only thing I can think of, because to me, especially after watching Giannis win back-to-backs and Steph winning back-to-backs, To me, he could do it statistically. I just kind of feel like this is a clear sign of people assuming that there's going to be fatigue and people not wanting him to win or not thinking that he could be deserving a second time.
All ludicrous. Nikola Jokic is incredible. And I think, obviously, winning it twice in a row is very difficult. And he will have to be better than he was to impress the voters.
I think so, too. Yep.
But, yeah, it's like, come on, man. Like, the odds were just, they don't jibe with me. Like, just give him better odds. Like, stop. Like, I don't know. I'm not saying he necessarily will win, but, like, the odds were just disrespectful. I mean, come on. Okay, give us another name, Chris.
Okay. Well, why don't I do this? I'll give you the last of the names where I'm like, these guys are expected to be in this conversation. And then you asked me for five. I ended up picking six. So I'll have two more after this. But the one last one that I'll throw in of like the favorites is Steph. Because for the same reasons we just talked about. I mean, Steph just went through a slight version of what we were just talking about with Jokic, where he's kind of been through this now where he knows what it is to play without another star, his second star. So whether Klay is there or not, I don't think Klay would be such an addition to where people view Steph's case and say, well, he's playing with another superstar, another star player, so it's not fair to give him the award. Like, I think that if the Warriors end up in a conversation where they're a top three seed, yes, a ton of that would be because of Klay, obviously, after watching them struggle to even make the playoffs last year or make the play-in last year. But I still think Steph would be spearheading the majority of what they do through his scoring, through his playmaking, through the way defenses have to defend him, and all the other things. And I think, you know, maybe it improved Steph as a scorer a little bit to have to be the way he had to play last year. And so I could see a universe in which Klay helps that. I could also see a universe in which, you know, maybe some of the young guys are a year older. You know, Steph is going to be playing with another couple of rookies. But again, Steph kind of learned how to be as dominant as he was because he had to do so much of it on his own, and that helps him for this year if he has to. So if the Warriors are higher up in the standings and Klay comes back but then gets hurt again or something like that, their record should be improved from Klay being back. It should be improved from Steph knowing how to kind of pace himself if he needs to do that, as just being the key guy and the lone guy in their offense. So I could see them finishing better, and I could see Steph getting the majority of the credit for that. So I could see a universe in which he wins it, again, just from being the ridiculous scorer and shooter that he is. So I don't think he'll be the guy, but I could see him being the guy. And, you know, what are his odds here? Plus 900. So again, it wouldn't be a great value pick, but I could see it happening in the same way that I've mentioned it be before.
Yeah, Steph finished third behind Jokic and Embiid for the MVP last season, and he did it on a team that didn't even, you know, they made the play-in and then they lost. They didn't make the playoffs. Like, that's kind of remarkable. Led the league in scoring. He averaged like 13 threes a game and was just... So, yeah, the question is basically, can he or would he, as you were outlining, like, would he be able to have the same type of statistical season on a team that was third or fourth in the West as opposed to really struggling at the bottom? And so you can definitely see the path for him to win his third, and he's still the most electric player in the world. I don't like, there's nothing like watching Steph Curry get hot. It's its own form of entertainment. So I love that pick, understand it. I have Giannis as my fourth name, and I guess it's okay. Like, it's, you know, he's plus 800, not a lot of names, better with better odds. I just feel like this is similar to KD, but maybe even more so. I think this is just a safe bet in that he's already a two-time winner, so we know that he can get to the MVP level. He lost votes last year despite having ridiculous numbers, ridiculous on-offs, the same resume, because he had not proven it in the playoffs. So he enters this season as a finals MVP and a world champion. The perception is completely different. And I just don't understand why, if Milwaukee finishes first or second in the East, which they should, they have a really good record. They struggle when he's off the floor, which I think they should again. And, you know, this guy averages the insane numbers that he does, the rebounding, the assists, the scoring, the efficiency. If he adds anything to his game in terms of a more consistent, even just a more consistent mid-range jump shot, which he was flashing in the playoffs at times, particularly in the finals, particularly in Game 7.
Or if he hits free throws like he did in Game 6.
Exactly, sure, yeah. If the free throws are even higher than they've been historically throughout his regular season. Like, you know, why couldn't... And the defense, also, like, he could be a Defensive Player of the Year winner again. Like,
and their offense was new to them last year. At least aspects of it were new. The point guard, so like, one more year playing with a new-ish group of guys with a new-ish offense. You know, 100%. He's comfortable now. Yeah.
100%. That's just a really easy... Yeah, it's an easy sell for me personally, and I think people would love to give him his third if the resume was the same, because he climbed the mountaintop, he won the title, and he's arguably the face of the NBA right now.
Man, if that dude has three MVPs by 27... and all the other awards he has, I mean, he would have as many MVPs as LeBron has now at 27. LeBron has three, right? Not four?
I think LeBron has four. Let me double check while you're talking.
Does he have? Anyway, yeah, now I can't remember. But, I mean, it's crazy to think that he would have accomplished a lot of these things before our friend Mr. James. But
LeBron does have four, for the record.
Okay. Okay, so maybe he wouldn't be there. But, I mean, he's young. And I think the scary thing that, like you said, I mean, there's a very clear way. When we talk about the improvements Giannis has to make, I keep saying this. There's really the one improvement that he has to make. I mean, he's not a good shooter yet. He's not as horrendous as everybody makes him out to be. As far as, you know, how he shoots from three, it's not good at all. But, you know, there's a universe in which, you know, at some point, hopefully by the time he's 30, that he's an average shooter. And if he is, and that was the only thing that you could really bank on in terms of being able to stop him by just walling him off and standing a few feet off of the guy, good luck, man. You know, like, he's got plenty of time to figure that out. And if and when he does, if that's all that's been holding him back, and he's already won two MVPs and a title without that, if he adds it, like, what argument are you making to not, you know, if the guy averages 35 a game and he's a good shooter too, on top of all the other crazy stuff this guy does, good luck. I just don't know how you're holding him out of conversations. And, you know, to Mannix's credit, Mannix, it was awkward because the week that I wrote that, you know, Jokic is the clear MVP story, Mannix had written, shouldn't Giannis be in this conversation piece like the day before? And I remember even asking our editors, I'm like, I had just joined SI and I was like, is Mannix going to hate me if I write a piece saying that this conversation is essentially over, like, one day after he basically inserted Giannis in this conversation? But again, Giannis's counting stats were exactly the same, more or less. And he had won it the 2 years before and was young and was on a team that was a contender. So, yeah, that's an interesting case. Like, I think that fatigue exists, but maybe you wake people up when you win a title, you know, especially if the thought process was that the failure in the playoffs was holding him back from people wanting to reward him again. So we'll see. He'll be very interesting to watch, because, you know, his numbers probably aren't going to fall off. So it'll be very interesting to watch.
Yeah. So who's your last name, Chris?
So I had two, remember. But I'll mention them both here just for the sake of time.
You broke the rules of the exercise.
Now I'm on my Rohan stuff. So I had two guys that were both long shots. One is plus 5,000 and the other is plus 10,000. So you would win $5,000 off this and $10,000 respectively. The 5,000 pick was Jimmy Butler, a guy that I think is someone who would probably get credit for, you know, if Miami has a really good season here after adding Kyle Lowry. You know, it's someone that I think missed a lot of the season this past year, but is incredibly, incredibly impactful when he's out there. Who plays very hard on both ends of the floor. A guy that, you know, we talk about narrative. You know, I think enough of us know his story at this point as far as kind of what he battled to even make it to the league in the first place. A guy that got drafted at the very end of the first round. A guy that I don't know if you'd say the Bulls gave up on him, but decided to move on from. A guy that chose to go to Miami as kind of a lone star at the time, and now, you know, has more talent around him and has gotten them to the finals. A guy that, you know, if he can get them to a one or a two seed, people will view that as an accomplishment. So I think, you know, I think he makes sense from that perspective. Do I think he'll win again? No, that's why he's a little bit more of a long shot. But, you know, from a value perspective, would not be a bad pick, I don't think. And to give you my last one, who is, you know, twice the underdog that Butler so, is through the implied odds. Go ahead.
Before you give me your last one, which I'm going to guess after I say my statement on
sure.
My thoughts on Jimmy. I think I know who your last one is, but Jimmy, I think that's a really interesting pick, and obviously they would need the Miami Heat to be exceptional, like a borderline juggernaut. He'd have to be the best player. He has never finished higher than 10th for MVP in his career. Did you know that?
But, you know, I did not know that, but I guess my response to it would be like, when has this team ever been in clear contention for the top seed? And even now you could make the argument they probably won't, but they could realistically be a top three finisher in the East. I don't think they've ever been in a position where they were expected to do that. And even when they went to the finals, Fair. They were, what, a five seed? So, you know, this might be the real first opportunity that he has to do that. It's always been, can they make the playoffs? And if they do, it's almost like a pleasant surprise, or, you know, that they barely make it with the Bulls or with Minnesota, you know, and even with Miami when they made the finals, they were five. So, you know, I'm interested to see if they do finish as a top two or a three. It's always a little bit dicey to figure out who would get the credit for that among mm-hmm. MVP voters. But I do think he would be a sexy pick from that perspective if he does.
So I the other thing is that he just doesn't score enough. Like, he's too selfless. You got to score, like, even Jokic, who's the greatest passing big man in NBA history. What do you average, like 27, 26 points something last year? Like, you got to score a lot of points. And Jimmy can do it if he wanted to. He's shown that in the playoffs. He lives at the free throw line. But I don't think he's ever, I'm going to look this up right now as I'm speaking to you. I don't think he's ever averaged like over 22 points in a season. Like, what's his career? 23.9 in 2017 was his career high, and has only been above 24 other seasons. So it's possible, for sure. I think that would be the thing that holds him back a little bit, because people are just infatuated with points who vote for this award. That's just like a fact.
They are, which is exactly why my last pick will not win the award. But, you know, after this past season, I think it would make sense to at least think about it as a value pick. Chris Paul.
Of course.
Again, I don't think he'll win. I mean, you would win 10 grand if you bet the 100 and then he does win. Look, if the conversation around Jokic last year was that he was in the conversation, or that he was the beneficiary and won because all these other guys were hurt, Chris Paul, in some sense, benefited from that same thing too. He finished fifth in the MVP voting. To what you just said, he's not a scorer. He can score. It's probably a little bit more of an uphill battle for him to score. You know, Jimmy Butler has more things in his bag to be able to score, just, you know, getting to the line and as aggressive as he can be. Chris Paul can get 30 for you, but, you know, it takes a lot out of him probably to do that. He has another, you know, top 10, 15 scorer in the league on his team, and Booker. He's responsible for getting the ball to Ayton. There are other guys, other mouths that need to be fed on that roster too. So, but he can assist his butt off. He still is one of the smartest players in the league. And, you know, I don't know. You could make the argument that last season would have been a better year for him to be in the MVP conversation. I think because so many people did not watch Phoenix. And so, again, when there's that credit question of who deserves the credit for a team overachieving with the Suns, is it Monty Williams? Is it Devin Booker? Is it Chris Paul? Devin Booker and Monty Williams had been in Phoenix already. And so I think people looked at the new addition to the Suns and said, oh, well, we're going to credit Chris Paul. So that's why he deserves to be in this conversation. Otherwise, it gets really difficult to kind of look at just his scoring and say that he deserves to be in that conversation. Could he win despite that? Because people know that he's a distributor first and then a scorer when he needs to be. Maybe. I find it a little bit hard to believe that he would leapfrog all these other people in the race and win. But, you know, if you've got the money to bet and you don't mind losing $100 potentially, the fact that you could win $10,000 for betting Chris Paul is not a bad bet, considering that he did just finish in the top five last year. And the fact that he will be and his team will be more on the radar than they were last year because they just made it to the finals.
So points are not everything, but we are kind of framing this around, can you score? We have been in the last like 2 minutes. Can you score or not? And so my last name is kind of wrapped around that a little bit. And kind of also wrapped around the odds, which I love. And I don't think anyone who listens to this podcast regularly or knows me personally will be surprised to say that Jason Tatum is my selection here. He is plus 2,500. I love those odds. And I love players who head into the season with incredibly low expectations as a team, I think. Now, maybe I'm being a little too dramatic there, but I feel like the Celtics are one of those teams that could finish a lot higher than most people. If you just look at the win total projections and all that, the over-unders, all that, I think the Boston Celtics could blow those out of the water based on how the roster is constructed. And Tatum is positioned now, entering his fifth year. I mean, time really flies with this guy. Entering his fifth year, averaged 26 last season. Jaylen Brown is obviously a terrific scorer in his own right and will carry some load for sure. But Kemba's gone. I don't anticipate all those shots going to Dennis Schroeder. And I do anticipate a whole bunch of them being reallocated to the two stars, with Tatum asserting himself as the best player on the team and one of the best players in the conference. So I feel like a scoring title is something that he can compete with, or realistically attain with, you know, KD and Harden both on the same team and needing to share the ball also with Kyrie Irving and the other scorers on that team. So if Tatum is averaging, if his scoring goes from 26.4 to 30 or 31, and the Celtics finish with the 3 seed in the East, he's definitely going to be in the conversation for MVP. And I don't know, like he there's just very few weaknesses in his game, and he's coming off the season where, I said this before, like so much went wrong with him personally and with the team as a whole. And he's like, if his pull-up 2-point jump shot numbers kind of go back to what they normally were, because they were really bad last year, the scoring just goes through the roof. And he showed in the playoffs and towards the end of the season that he can live at the free throw line as well, which is something he struggled with, drawing fouls throughout his career. So if you just put those things together, coming off the Team USA run where he finished second in scoring in the gold medal game to KD, I don't know. I think this is going to be a monster season for him, and plus 2,500. I love those odds.
No, it makes total sense. I mean, the question that you raised, or the thing that you brought up there, I think that's interesting, is the scoring conversation, because, like I said, I'm generally looking at guys that, you know, unprecedented levels for themselves, you know, as far as efficiency, career highs in efficiency and scoring and rebounding, assisting. You know, and a lot of that speaks to opportunity, the idea that you can't really score more unless you have the opportunity to do it. If you're already taking a lot of shots, you can't assist more unless your team doesn't have a whole lot of other ball handlers. So he will be potentially in a position where he's got more opportunity to do that. The other guy that is interesting too, that I kind of flirted with the idea of throwing him on this list, was Beal. But I think there's probably not that much more room for him to score a whole lot more. Or if there is, because Westbrook isn't there and he'll have more chances, whether the efficiency will increase through that. If you take way more shots, it's really hard to be just as efficient, if not more efficient. But it is interesting, like, I know a lot of it is pace. I know a lot of it is just these guys are incredible athletes and incredible players. But the idea that, I remember how big a deal it was, you know, some years back when Steph was at 30 and 35 points a game. And now we're like in a realm where, it's not a regular thing now, but you've got multiple guys that could kind of compete for that within their own team situations, but also just the efficiency that they've got. And Beal is one of them. And the idea that Beal will have more opportunity to score now, theoretically, But also, I don't know that he could potentially score 35 a game and still wouldn't be a realistic MVP candidate. We just watched that happen. So it's a little bit crazy to think about how high the bar is and just how talented this league is, how many guys there are that could realistically be in contention for this. But it's fun to think about. It's very fun to think about.
So before we wrap up, because we're going real long with this MVP hypothetical discussion here, way longer than I thought we would.
Me too.
Whose odds, and maybe we've already discussed this player, but whose odds do you disagree with the most, or just when you saw them, just like made your eyes pop and you just didn't understand?
I think it was Lucas, actually. I mean, he's the favorite here. He's the favorite here, and I mean, I guess age trajectory-wise, I get it. But when we talk about the things that we know voters tend to care about, how good you are, obviously, but then also where your team finishes, do you think Dallas is going to finish as a top four seed in the West? Because I mean, they made a change or two. Their roster is not fundamentally different than it was. They throw in Reggie Bullock. They'll lose Richardson. Like, I don't see the team being fundamentally different. I think they wanted to have a bigger summer than they had. Luka could obviously win, even if the team is not that much better than they were last year. But unless he makes a huge, huge leap here and is doing more by himself, I fundamentally don't quite understand him being the favorite here, unless it's just, well, it's his turn and everybody else has kind of either had their chance or that we don't think that Embiid's going to play enough games. Like, I didn't quite understand what logic was being used here other than maybe age and expectation for him personally. For him to be the favorite here.
That is fascinating, and I love it. I agree with you. I honestly don't know, like, if you were to say Luka should not be the favorite, I don't know, and this is not even looking at, like, gambling odds or anything like that, like, who should be the favorite? Like, should it be Giannis? Should it be KD? Who do you think?
I mean, I think you raised a really good point when you said KD. Like, KD was putting up MVP numbers off an Achilles, which, if we're talking about narrative, I think that actually would have mattered and should have mattered. I didn't hear it talked about much in that way. But I guess it comes down to, like, if you don't think KD can or should win the award, you're probably making that argument because you feel like his team is too stacked and whatever he does doesn't matter. It doesn't end up mattering, which is kind of what he dealt with in Golden State. We never heard KD's name come up in Golden State for MVP. And quite frankly, you know, when we look back at LeBron when he went to Miami and the fact that he didn't win MVP that year against Rose, that was the argument that a lot of people made, is like, voters don't reward people that go to situations like that where they've got a powerhouse. So I guess, but again, to me, he was coming off an Achilles. I mean, we talk about the 50-40-90. I mean, Kyrie was putting up 50-40-90. You know, so that everybody becomes more efficient in a situation like that. We know Durant is capable. We know Durant is the best scorer on that team when he just puts his foot down and decides he's going to do it. So to me, like, and they, if they're healthy, they're likely to be a one seed. Even if they're not healthy, they might be a one seed just on, you know, developing slightly better cohesion than what they had when they played like 8 games together or whatever last year. So to me, KD would make a lot of sense, unless you're just basically admitting that he won't win or that guys shouldn't vote for him because of the fact that he's with Brooklyn. But even then, I still think you might have a stronger argument for him than Luka as a 6 or a 7 seed or whatever the Mavs might finish as. Unless you think that Luka is going to be so overpowering by himself that with a team that really wasn't that fundamentally improved, that he is going to deserve it by himself without really any consideration given to where the Mavs finish.
So, yes, I agree with all that. The player whose odds really made no sense to me. Actually, before I say that, I want to say real quick that Trae Young at +1600 is a great bet, and Trae Young could easily win MVP this season because his team's good and he's going to put up ridiculous numbers. So just want to get that out of the way really quick. But the player whose odds I really don't understand, and maybe this is just because I don't understand gambling that well, is Russell Westbrook at +2500. Yeah. Same odds as Harden, same odds as AD, and same odds as Jason Tatum. Slightly better odds than Donovan Mitchell and Kyrie Irving.
Yeah.
So you're just not going to win an MVP if you're the third best player on a team that has AD and LeBron, it's just like, I can't even envision a scenario. Because if any of those dudes are hurt for an extended period, the team is going to suck. So what is happening here? Is this just because Lakers fans gamble a lot? Like, I really don't get it.
I looked at that one. That's a really good pick, because I looked at that one and I was like, he's really high on these odds compared to some of these other guys. I was looking at Domantas Sabonis. I'm like, I might take Sabonis before I take Westbrook and these odds. I think it's the idea that Westbrook has won it before. You know, I think, 4 years ago? Was it more recent? Less recent than that? I can't remember.
2017, yeah.
Yeah, he won it 4 years ago. I mean, he's on a team that's going to get more attention than anybody else. He's playing with great players. I mean, part of the reason you make these odds, too, well, all of a sudden I go from the guy not knowing anything about betting to now explaining why you make the odds books the way you do. Right. I mean, you know that there will be some people out there that put money on him. So some people, particularly people that are not diehards or people that really understand the X's and O's, people will see Russell Westbrook on the team. They'll look at the Lakers kind of having, walked out a little bit wounded last year. And you'll say, if the Lakers get back to where they were, or they win the whole thing, or they're in contention to win the whole thing, Westbrook was the piece that put them over the top, which that doesn't scream MVP to me, but you have some people that will think that way. And you have a big name who's won an MVP before on that team. I don't see a universe in which he could realistically win the award. I just don't. I don't even know what that would look like if the two of them, LeBron and AD both got hurt. I don't see a universe in which it happens unless Russell Westbrook turns back the clock to 2017. I mean, if he did what he was doing in Oklahoma City with LA, he would win MVP because everybody would see it, because it would be the Lakers. But that was a long time ago. And, I just wouldn't see that one happening. I don't think it would happen.
I think winning Sixth Man of the Year is more likely, personally. But
wow,
yeah, I don't want to get. But it would be a good
that Michael. We could have that conversation. I can't remember who I was talking with about this. I think I was talking with an Uber driver recently, who wanted to know. he asked what I did for a living, and I normally don't get into that unless someone just asked straight up. I was like, well, I write about basketball, and he was really excited about the Russ move. He's an LA fan. And I said, man, I'll be really honest with you. I don't love that move for them. I would like this move more if they just came right out and said he's going to be their sixth man. So the idea that he would have a better chance at winning sixth man than MVP, I'm right there with you on that, because I would probably feel differently about this team if he were their sixth man as opposed to their third option, quite frankly.
Mm-hmm.
Probably another conversation for another time, but it's true, and I feel that way.
It is another conversation for another time. Chris, this was so much fun. Thank you to all of our listeners who are still hanging around. shout out to you. Chris and I will be back next week, and we have potentially a special episode in the works, but I don't want to step on it too much in case it doesn't happen, so I will not say anything more. But Rohan and I will be back. We'll be back later this week. Please keep the emails coming, openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Everybody stay safe out there, and everybody continue to enjoy the NBA offseason. Hey.